الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم، والصلاة والسلام على خير المرسلين وعلى آله وأصحابه أجمعين. ولا حول ولا قوة إلا بالله العلي العظيم. سبحانك اللهم لا علم لنا إلا ما علمتنا إنك أنت العليم الحكيم. So the last few weeks we've been going through a very long chapter that deals with various matters relating to the prayer. It gathers together lots of different matters relating to the prayer. So we've been talking about sahu, which is when you forget things in your prayer, and people who are susceptible to that and those types of things. Now we're going to move on to something else, which is making up prayers. When you have prayers to make up, when you've missed prayers in the past and you have to make them up now. I mean, there's different ways of doing prayer. There's ada, when you pray prayers in their time, and qada, when you pray prayers outside of their time. And then there's repeating prayers, when you've done a prayer and you're not sure it's accepted, and then you repeat it again, or you repeat it again in order to get more reward. So there's the various different ways prayers can be done. So Ibn Abi Zayd, rahimahullah, says, وَمَنْ ذَكَرَ صَلَاةً صَلَّاهَا وَمَنْ ذَكَرَ صَلَاةً. If somebody remembers a prayer, صَلَّاهَا مَتَى مَا ذَكَرَهَا, he should pray it the moment he remembers it. He should pray it the moment he remembers it. عَلَى نَحْوِ مَا فَاتَتْهُ, in the same form that it should have been prayed in its time. So, for example, if you remember that you haven't prayed dhuhr, then you pray dhuhr in the same way that dhuhr should have been prayed. Four rakats, silently in the first two rakats, the recitation silent in the first two rakats. If you happen to have been traveling when you missed that prayer, then you pray in the form that it should have been prayed then, as a traveling prayer. Two rakats for dhuhr.
If you're making up dhuhr, like in the example you just gave, but it's night time,
yeah,
and you remember, do you still pray it silently?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Vice versa.
Yeah, absolutely. You pray it in the manner that it should have been prayed in its own time. That's what he's saying here. So dhuhr in its own time is always prayed with silent recitation. Maghrib in its own time is always prayed without loud recitation. Dhuhr, when you are a muqeem, when you are resident, when you are not traveling, is always four rakats. Dhuhr, when you are traveling, is always two rakats, and so on. ثُمَّ عَادَ مَا كَانَ فِي وَقْتِهِ مِمَّا صَلَّى بَعْدَهَا. Now this next part is an important one that a lot of people maybe don't understand or don't quite grasp. Or a lot of people misunderstand this. I've heard quite a few people say, or they've been told, that if you've missed a prayer and it was five prayers ago, you have to make up all of the prayers in between. Some people think that's the case. You know, if there's less than five prayers between the prayer that you missed, they think you have to make up all. That's not the case. It's only the case if, well, there's two things here. The first is if you miss dhuhr, and then you pray Asr, and then after you've prayed Asr, you're in the time of Dhuhr and Asr still. After you've prayed Asr, you remember, oh my gosh, I didn't pray Dhuhr. The moment you remember you haven't prayed Dhuhr, you have to pray Dhuhr. So you pray the Dhuhr. But what about the Asr that you already prayed? It's in the same time, is it? What do you do? Do you have to repeat the Asr or not? What he's saying here is you do. You have to repeat the prayer in whose time you are in. So the Asr, because the order between Dhuhr and Asr, and when they share a time, has to be maintained. Dhuhr has to become before Asr. As soon as you've made up the Dhuhr after the Asr, you have to then also make up the Asr after it. You understand? Because the order between the two prayers must be maintained. If you didn't remember that you hadn't prayed Dhuhr until after Maghrib, then you would only pray the Dhuhr and not the Asr, because they're no longer in the same time. Yeah? If you remember the Dhuhr after Maghrib, you only pray the Dhuhr and not the Maghrib, because the order between the, I mean, this is where the, you know, where some, there is maybe some difference of opinion. But if you remember during a prayer, whether you have to pray, because during a prayer, whether it invalidates that prayer or not, there's some discussion. But in terms of the order, you have to maintain Dhuhr and Asr, Maghrib and Isha. They have to be in order. But you don't have to make up prayers that you're no longer in the time of. So if you miss Dhuhr and you're outside of the now the time the time shared between Dhuhr and Asr, outside the Dhuhr time of Dhuhr, you only pray Dhuhr and you don't pray the Asr that came after, or the Maghrib that came after that. Is that clear? So if a prayer is completely outside of its time when you remember it, you don't make up the other prayer within that time. This only applies when there's five or less prayers, as we're going to come to. If you haven't prayed for years, maybe when you were young, you were a Muslim, but you weren't really doing the prayer. Then you come to make up years worth of prayers. You don't have to do them immediately, and that does not invalidate any prayers in whose time you're in. Is that clear? So he says here, وَمَنْ عَلَيْهِ صَلَوَاتٌ كَثِيرَةٌ. If you have lots of prayers to make up, صَلَّاهَا فِي كُلِّ وَقْتٍ مِّن لَيْلٍ أَوْ نَهَارٍ. You pray them at any time of day or night. At any time of day or night. This applies to when you make up prayers in general. The moment you remember it, even if it's a time when it's forbidden to pray, such as while the sun is touching the horizon, when it's rising or setting, when the actual disk of the sun is touching the horizon, you're not allowed to pray. But even then, you make up prayers. You're only not allowed to pray nafila prayers, not prayers which are obligatory and you have to make up. Even if you're in the Jummah and suddenly you remember, oh, I didn't pray subh. You don't just sit there and say, ah, I'll make it up afterwards. No, it's incumbent on you to do it now. But with the proviso that when you're in the Jummah, if you're somebody who people look to for the deen and they tend to follow your example, you have to be very careful not to just stand up in the Jummah and start praying while the imam's on the minbar. Because they might then take that as a sign that it's okay for people to do, they don't know what you're praying, but for people to pray during the Jummah while the imam's on the minbar, which is not for us. So in that case, you have to go out of the mosque, maybe into, or go somewhere where people can't see you at the back and pray there. But you still have to pray it immediately. You can't just hang around and wait. So he says, at any time of day or night, in wa inda tulu' ash-shams wa inda ghurubiha, when the sun is setting, when the sun is rising, wa kayfa ma tayassara lah, and however it is easy for you. So this is the important thing when you have lots and lots of prayers to make up. Basically, you fit them into your life as best you can without disrupting your life completely. If you have a year's worth of prayer, you could probably stand for a week and still not have completed all those prayers. Or maybe 10 years worth of prayers. It would take you a long time to finish them all. And you basically will put your life on hold in order to do that. You don't do that. Basically, you fit them into your life so you can still do your life as you were doing it. So an easy way that people often do to do this is maybe they'll add one prayer with each prayer. So they would do a dhuhr with every dhuhr, then an asr, an extra asr with every asr, and so on. Or they might do five prayers with each prayer. So once they've done dhuhr, they would then do five connected to it in order to get, like, in one day, 5 days worth of prayers done. You wouldn't do two dhuhrs with every dhuhr, though, because then you'd be doing prayers out of order. Because it goes dhuhr, asr, maghrib, isha, subh. It doesn't go dhuhr, dhuhr, asr, asr, maghrib, maghrib. وَإِنْ كَانَتْ يَسِيرَةً. If there's a small amount of prayers, أَقَلَّ مِنْ صَلَاةِ يَوْمٍ وَلَيْلَةٍ, which is less than the number of prayers of a day and night, or the number of prayers of a day and night. There's a difference of opinion about whether it's five or four. I mean, whether it's six or five prayers, less than six or less than five. So either four or five, generally five prayers. If you have five prayers or less, it's the stronger position. بَدَأَ بِهِنْ. You do those prayers first. Even he says here, wa in fata waqtu ma fi waqti. Even if the time of the prayer that you are in is lost as a result. So if you remember that you have dhuhr to make, and you're right at the end of the time of subh when you remember, and the sun is about to rise, you don't think, oh, I've got to get my subh in its time, so I've got to pray subh first. No. You pray your dhuhr that you missed, and then you pray your subh outside of its time. It's very important. So if you have five prayers and it pushes the prayer completely out of its time, that's what you have to do. You don't put the prayer whose time it is now first. But if there were lots of prayers, you would. You wouldn't say, oh, I've got a year's worth of prayers to do, so I'll pray them now, and even if it means delaying subh outside of this time. No. Difference. This is the difference between the two. The one, when there's a small amount of prayers, the time is now. That is the prayer's time. Not in a few minutes, not after I've done this or that. It's now. Obviously, after you've done wudu and got ready. The moment you remember it. This applies when you wake up in the morning, by the way. If you've slept through subh, you don't just put the subh off saying, well, I've missed the time. Let's go and have breakfast and I'll go and do the ironing and whatever else, you know. And then I'll do subh, you know, once I, you know, I'm feeling a bit more awake. No. His time is immediately the moment you remember it. وإن كثرت بدأ بما يخاف فوات وقته. If there are lots of prayers that you owe, then you begin your prayers with the one whose time you are feared that you might you are afraid you might miss if you don't pray it now, as I said. ومن ذكر صلاة في صلاة. What happens if you remember that prayer that you missed while you are in another prayer? So he says, if you remember a prayer in a prayer, فسدت هذه عليه. That prayer that you are doing becomes invalid the moment you remember another prayer. But there is a proviso on this, or there's a difference of opinion about this. In this one, some people say it relates only to when the prayers share a time and you're still in their time. So if you've missed Dhuhr and you start praying Asr, and then you remember in Asr, oh my gosh, I haven't prayed Dhuhr. Asr is finished. The Asr does not count. Whether you continue to stand or not relates to matters relating to fitna, whether you leaving that prayer will cause fitna or not. Generally speaking, you'll leave the prayer because that prayer is no longer valid. But if you are in a position where you're leaving immediately, will cause fitna because people will see you sort of like walking off and abandoning the imam as if you know disagreeing with him, then you have to be careful in those situations. But the prayer is invalid regardless. That's in Dhuhr and Asr or Maghrib and Isha. As for if I remembered while I'm praying Maghrib, but I haven't prayed Dhuhr, there's a difference of opinion here. Some say because the time of that prayer is immediate, the Maghrib is invalid. Others say that it's not a shart. And because it's not a condition, it's obligatory that you pray that prayer first, but it's not a condition that it be prayed first, that it invalidates other prayers, that your Maghrib is valid. But it's safer to take the position that even the Maghrib is invalid in that situation and pray it again. ومن ضحك في صلاة أعادها. If you laugh out loud while you are praying, then you have to repeat the prayer. He says here, ولم يعد الوضوء. But if you laugh while you are doing wudu, you don't have to repeat your wudu. وَإِنْ كَانَ مَعْ إِمَامٍ If you are praying behind an imam, تَمَادَى وَعَادٍ You stay in the prayer and then repeat the prayer. So basically what he's saying here is laughing out loud invalidates the prayer. Whether you do it involuntarily or deliberately or however you do it. Making a sound of merriment with a voice. There are other types of sounds people might make. You might cough. You might yawn. You might weep. Or cry, none of those ones have the same ruling as laughing. Laughing invalidates it. Those other ones, there are, you know, coughing doesn't, Yawning doesn't. Sighing doesn't unless you do it a lot and deliberately. Blowing doesn't unless you're doing it deliberately and a lot. Weeping depends on the reason for the weeping. If you're crying out of pain, there's a certain amount of leeway. If you're crying out of sadness, not so much. And if you're crying out of ibadah, you something's affected you of the recitation that you're doing or something like that, then you have even more leeway. But still, it should be without sound as much as possible when you're crying in the prayer. But laughter, it breaks it. Now, say you are, even if it's just like one small, you know, like that. But if you're praying behind an imam, he says, you continue because out of respect for the imam. Except if you can't control this laughter and it will cause other people praying with you to start laughing, which is very possible. Laughter is infectious. So in those cases, then you better leave because you are going to disrupt the prayer of quite a few people if you stay and continue to laugh uncontrollably. And it happens to people. Sometimes people just get bouts of laughter for no apparent reason. وَلَا شَيْءَ عَلَيْهِ فِي التَّبَسُّمِ. But as for smiling, or, you know, you want to laugh, but you actually manage to control it without any sound. So something's very funny, and but you don't make any sound. That does not break your prayer. وَالنَّفْخُ فِي الصَّلَاةِ كَالْكَلَامِ. Blowing in the prayer, you know, like maybe you've got something in your clothes, you involuntarily try and blow it off or whatever it is. Or you have like yawning, like when you know sighing or sighing out of something like that. It's like it has the same ruling as speech. So what's the ruling on speech? No, not always. If it's deliberate and it's disconnected to the prayer, it breaks the prayer. If it is involuntary, it has the same ruling as eating and drinking and blowing. It does not break the prayer if it's only a little. So if somebody, for example, comes up to you and says, Assalamu alaikum, and you involuntarily, without thinking, say, Wa alaikum assalam, that doesn't break your prayer. But if you start having a chat about life, the universe, and everything with some guy who's standing next to you, forgetting you're praying, and then suddenly remember, that would break your prayer. Or if you deliberately speak, an example of this is you see somebody, a blind man, about to walk off a cliff. You say, oh, stop. Yes, you have to do that because you have to protect life, but it breaks your prayer because you've spoken deliberately outside of the prayer. The deliberate speech that is allowed is when it is to rectify the prayer, like subhanallah or something like that, when the imam has made a mistake in order to draw his attention. Blowing is the same as speech. وَالْعَامِدُ لِذَٰلِكَ مُفْسِدٌ لِصَلَاتِ. So if you do that deliberately, your prayer is being invalidated. وَمَنْ أَخْطَأَ الْقِبْلَةَ. So now here we're talking about qibla, which is something he maybe could have mentioned earlier when we were talking about the things that have to be in place before you pray, the shurut, the preconditions for the validity of the prayer, when he mentioned, for example, covering your nakedness, satr al-awra, or when he mentioned removing physical impurity from your body in the place in which you're praying, and your clothes, or when he mentioned doing wudu, obtaining purity of the ritual kind. But he didn't mention the qibla here because he's going to mention it in the form of when you're praying and you do so while you're already in the prayer. Because it's you know, everybody is required to find out what the qibla is, either by getting the tools to know the qibla, by working out the signs of how to distinguish the qibla from the stars or from the sun and the moon or however else people have worked this out. I suppose the use of compasses is another one. Or you have to find people who know and then who are trustworthy and ask them and get it from them. Or you use the qibla of the place of the land in which you are in, if it's a land where the Muslims have been for a long time and it's expected the Muslims will not have made a mistake. So you go to a mosque and there's a qibla there, you take that qibla. The various different ways that you're expected to, at least. But when you're outside on your own, there are circumstances where you, maybe it's cloudy. You have no idea how to work out where the qibla is. You haven't got a compass, it's cloudy. So there are times when you make a mistake with the qibla. You basically guess a direction. Or you misread the signs and make a mistake. We're talking about a mistake here. So he says here, وَمَنْ أَخْطَأَ الْقِبْلَةَ, if you make a mistake regarding the qibla, so you misread the signs and you pray in the wrong direction, or you simply guess a direction and because you don't know which way it is and make a mistake. If you get it wrong, it is recommended for you to make up the prayer in the time. Your prayer is valid, even if you prayed in the opposite direction. It's not invalid, so long as you made an effort to find the qibla and simply made a mistake. If you deliberately pray in the wrong direction, your prayer is invalid, even if you pray off by a little bit. If you deliberately know the Qibla, especially if you're in Mecca and you see the Kaaba and you deliberately miss the Kaaba, for example. Or if you're in the mosque of the Rasul, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and you decide to pray in a different Qibla to that of the in which the Rasul, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, established the mosque. This applies to any mosque in which the Rasul sallallahu alaihi wasallam prayed and it's known where he prayed. You cannot pray in a different direction to that at all. But he says here it doesn't invalidate it because he said whenever there is something in the time, what that implies is that the action was valid and you are making the repetition of the prayer out of ihtiyat, out of precaution, in order to make sure, cover your bases, basically. As you know, make sure you've done it in the best possible way that you can do in order to get the best possible reward from Allah for it. So basically, if you make a mistake in the Qibla, you repeat it in the time. وَكَذَٰلِكَ مَنْ صَلَّى. So that, yeah, there are other things. There's also, for example, you forget the Qibla. You know where the Qibla is, and say in your own house, you've worked out the Qibla, but then you're just absent-minded and you pray in the opposite direction for some reason, which I've seen people, a lot of people do. Or in a different direction by knowing the Qibla, but you've forgotten it temporarily. That's considered to be worse than making a mistake in it. Some people say that if you are more than 90 degrees out, that you always have to make up the prayer in that case. But again, some people say the position is the same as making a mistake in the Qibla. By the way, you only are recommended to do it if you are more 90 degrees or more out. Not if you've just done it a little bit out. So say, for example, the Qibla is there and you pray straight ra rather than the slight angle that you're meant to be praying. And then you remember afterwards, oh, the Qibla was that. You're not recommended to repeat that prayer at all. It's only if you pray it a long, not a long way out.
What about if you made a mistake about the Qibla, because you didn't you were looking at the sun and you made the wrong judgment or something?
Yeah.
You did the prayer and you went away from that place. You came back to the same place a year later or something, and you thought, "Oh, I need to pray this way because that's what I did last time." But actually, you were making a mistake again.
Well, only if you're still making the same judgment. Doesn't matter if you're make if the, if it's the same mistake. If you're actually making a mistake based on you trying to find the Qibla, then it's recommended for you to make up in the time. If even if you repeat that mistake, it's still recommended. If you deliberately know that you made a mistake last time and you still do it the same way anyway, forgetting that you made a mistake, that's different. Or if you forget you made a mistake, or you just know that it was wrong, but you think, oh, I'll look stupid if I do it in a different way and with a group of people here, then you do it in the same way. That's different. That's being either doing it deliberately or doing it out of forgetfulness. But making a mistake is clear. If you're a blind person and you pray in the wrong direction, having made the effort, even if you pray with your back to the Qibla, it's not recommended for you to make it up. Because the expectation of somebody who's blind is not the same as the expectation of somebody who's sighted. So the thing is, when you're in, most of the time, we have to find trustworthy people because now in this age, very few people actually have the capacity to work out the Qibla from the stars. They don't know them well enough. And sometimes you go to some countries and they have mosques, and even those mosques have been built in the wrong direction. You go to Fez, for example, but that doesn't excuse you because it's known by the imam praying there and the other people there what the actual Qibla is, that you don't just follow the direction of the mosque. So you have to do it there in those places as well. وكذلك من صلى بثوب نجس أو على مكان نجس. Similarly, if you pray in a garment which is either impure in itself or has impurity on it, and you forget, you do that by mistake, or you forget that you are wearing it. Say you've been doing some work. And you're a butcher, for example. You've been cutting up meat, and all this the blood is spattered on you afterwards. Or when you've been slaughtering animals, and you forget it's on your clothes, and then you pray, and then you remember within the time, then it's recommended that you do it up. But if you don't remember in the time, there is no recommendation to pray it again. Or say you pray with a belt made out of pig skin or whatever it is. And you forget that you're wearing it, and then you do your prayer, and then you remember afterwards in the time. By the time here, it's talking for Dhuhr and Asr right up until the yellowing of the sun. So the time of Dhuhr is extended a little bit beyond its usual daruri start. And for the time with respect to Maghrib and Isha in this particular matter goes all the way up to Fajr. And the time for Fajr goes all the way up to sunrise, according to those who say there's no daruri time. So it's not exactly the normal what we consider the time. We're not just talking about the ikhtiyari time here. So, or if you pray upon a place where there is impurity, forgetting that there's impurity there, you pray and then you realize, oh my God, that place is covered in blood, or completely forgot that all this blood had dropped onto it, or whatever.
I did have an unrelated question about that sort of thing, playing the purity of a place where you play. Say if you're out at somewhere like Whitlingham Broad,
Yeah.
and there's lots of sort of grass areas, can you just play on the grass?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned specific places where there's a high expectation where there's going to be impurity, where it's disliked. As for a place where there's no real high expectation, there might be. A dog might have come and pooped there, potentially. But I mean, the expectation of that is not high. So then in those places you pray. And by the place, it means where you put your head, where you put your hands, where you put your knees, where your clothing's going to touch. That's the place, not the entirety of the area that you're praying in. وَكَذَلِكَ مَنْ تَوَضَّعَ بِمَاءٍ نَجِسٍ مُخْتَلِفٍ فِي نَجَاسَتِهِ. Similarly, if you do wudu with water, about which there is a difference of opinion regarding whether it is impure or not. So, what does that mean? He mentioned before that when there's a small amount of water, less than two qullas, as they call it, and impurity falls into it, like two jugs worth, and the impurity falls into it, that even if it does not change the water, the scent of the water, the color of the water, the taste of the water all remain the same, but some people still say that that water is impure. So that is what he means by something about which there is a difference of opinion. So he's taking the precautionary principle here that if you do wudu in that, obviously not taking the position that that's pure, you just don't know either way, that it's recommended that you repeat afterwards. That's his position. Obviously, the people who take the position that it's pure, they're not going to necessarily take that position because they're doing it specifically because they're saying the water is pure. وَأَمَّا مَنْ تَوَضَّعَ بِمَاءٍ قَدْ تَغَيَّرَ لَوْنُهُ أَوْ طَعْمُهُ أَوْ رِيحُهُ. But if you do wudu in water with water whose color, taste, or scent has changed. And not just with impurity, by the way. Say that has changed with rose water, with rose or with honey, or some milk's been added to the water and the colour's changed, or any of these different types of things. Then, or urine, obviously, because that's impure, or blood, and that changes the colour of the water. That water is impure. If you do wudu with that water and then pray with that wudu, what does that mean for your prayer?
Perfect.
Invalid. What does that mean for the wudu?
Perfect.
Yes. So you have to do the wudu again and you have to do the prayer again. But if there's a difference of opinion about whether the water's pure or not, then it's pretty much the same as making a mistake in the qibla or wearing clothes upon which there is impurity. It's simply recommended in the time. If you wear clothes with impurity deliberately, by the way, that does invalidate your prayer. If impurity falls on you while you are praying and you know it's fallen on you, such as a type of the droppings of a bird that is not permitted to eat and lands on you, then that invalidates your prayer. Because it's not something you can actually, because it's wet, it's not something you can just brush off easily. So long as there is enough time left for you to clean it off and then go back to the prayer again. If you're right at the end of the time and there's it wouldn't be enough time to remove that impurity before the end of your prayer time, then it wouldn't invalidate it. Because obviously, if you're not able to pray because you've got impurity on you, then that implies that you have to either remove that garment and put a different one on, or wash that garment to remove the impurity. And if you go and do that, and that means you completely miss the time of the prayer, then the reason for doing it falls away because it's you don't have the qudra, you don't have the ability to remove it in the time. Because all of these things are with remembrance when you remember and your and the ability to remove it, for example. Jam'us Salah. So we're going to onto a different category here, and that is joining prayers. Of course, you came back from Iran recently. We know that the Shia take the position that you always join the prayers, but that's not our position. There are certain times and places and circumstances where it is either recommended, sunnah, or permitted to join prayers. So he goes through them here. He says here, وَرُخِّصَ فِي الْجَمْعِ It is a rukhsa. It is a dispensation. It is allowed to make for the purpose of making things easy for people. In to do fil jam'a, to do the joining of the prayers between Maghrib and Isha, بين المغرب والعشاء ليلة المطر. So the first one here, the first time when you're allowed to join the prayer is rainy nights. What does this mean? You know, there's a little bit of a sprinkle in the air. So you go to the mosque and you join the prayer? No. Rainy night means the rain is heavy, so much so that it's going to affect visibility or be dangerous, make the terrain dangerous or the journey dangerous. This is the purpose of this. It has a purpose here. It doesn't mean nowadays necessarily that people automatically, when it's raining in the night, join the Maghrib and Isha. This was to do with the lack of light traveling back at the time of Isha. Once the twilight had gone and it was raining, it would make the journey back for people very, very treacherous. They wouldn't have any light in order to navigate through those treacherous conditions because the twilight had gone. This was the purpose behind it. So that's why you do your Maghrib, you pray, you delay your Maghrib slightly, you do the Adhan out for Maghrib outside in the normal way on the minaret. Then you go back inside, the Imam waits a bit, say 10, 15 minutes or so, does the Maghrib, then the Adhan for Isha, done inside the mosque, and then the Iqama for Isha, and then he prays Isha straight after the Maghrib. No nafila prayers between them, no dhikrs after the salat between them. And then he finishes Isha when it's still enough light for people to go home safely, basically. So it doesn't mean you delay right till close to the time of Isha and then join them. You're joining them either towards the beginning of the time or in the middle of the time of Maghrib, but no later than that. Only in a mosque. And only for the purpose of people getting the fadl of Jama'ah. That's why, to make it easy for people who live, and this doesn't necessarily apply to people who live right next to the mosque or in the mosque complex. This wouldn't apply, such that they maybe don't need to really go outside properly in order to get to the mosque. This is people who live a reasonable distance from the mosque. And it's done for everybody in order to enable those people, if they're regulars to the mosque. You don't have people who never come to the mosque and then suddenly you say, well, no, there's some Muslims who live a mile away. The rest of them live right around the mosque. There's some Muslims who live a mile away. I think we should join Maghrib and Isha just in case they decide to come tonight. No. So that's number one. Joining Maghrib and Isha on rainy nights. وَكَذَلِكَ فِي طِينٍ وَظُلْمَةٍ. And the second one is when it is muddy outside and dark, but it may well not be raining. So the conditions are treacherous. It's maybe the beginning of the month when there's a new moon, so the moon is not very bright. Maybe it's cloudy, so it's dark. And it has rained, or other conditions have happened, or there's heavy winds that make it dangerous to that also applies. And the mud and the wind make it very, very treacherous and difficult to get home without any light. Sometimes the darkness is so thick, even if you have like a little lantern, heavy winds will make the lantern, though in those days especially, would have made the lanterns blow out and so on. So it was dangerous. So it's to do with danger. Same rules apply. So in these particular circumstances, oh, by the way, it doesn't have to be raining as well when you come. But there might be an expectation that it's going to be raining at the time of Isha. So it may only be drizzling at the time of Maghrib, but according to all of the people who know the way weather works, there's an expectation of a deluge close to the time of Isha. That would again apply, even if it wasn't actually physically raining yet. وَيُؤَذَّنُ لِلْمَغْرِبِ أول الوقت. So the Adhan of Maghrib is called at the beginning of the time, Kharij al Masjid, outside the mosque on the minaret. Thumma yuakhiru qalilan. So then the Imam delays a little bit, fi qawli Malik, according to the position of Malik. So he doesn't do the Adhan of Maghrib. Usually, Maghrib is prayed immediately because its time is considered to be only immediate. Yes? But there is a second position that I mentioned before in the Madhab. That the ikhtiyari time of Maghrib can stretch all the way to the beginning of the time of Isha. So they go outside of the mashhur, which is that the time is only at the beginning, to the less used position in these circumstances, that you can delay Maghrib and still be in its time. Yu'akhiru qalilan, and as I said, qalilan means maybe still within the first half of the time or up to maybe halfway through the time when there's still a bit of light. Thumma يقيم في داخل المسجد. Then you do the iqama inside the mosque, ويصليها, and you pray the maghrib. The imam prays with the people. This obviously is only applying when the imam is praying with people. This is not you're at home and you decide, oh, it's raining outside, I think I'll join Maghrib and Isha. ثم يؤذن للعشاء. Then the adhan for Isha is called في داخل المسجد, inside the mosque. ويقيم, and the iqama is called for Isha. Or ثم يؤذن للعشاء في داخل المسجد ويقيم, and the iqama. So there's no gap. You do the adhan straight away for Isha, and then you do the iqama. ثم يصليها, then you pray the Isha. ثم ينصرفون, then you go home. Then you leave the mosque and go home. وعليهم إسفار قبل مغيب الشفق. And there is still enough light around before the time that the twilight has disappeared for them to be able to safely travel, basically. That's the main reason here. That's number one and number two of the times where you join the prayers. Well, jam'u bi Arafah. Number three is joining. This is specific to people who are doing the Hajj. There's two places where you join the prayer on the Hajj. The first is at Arafat, and then basically when you go to Arafah, there is a there is a Jumu'ah, well, not a Jumu'ah, there is a khutbah that is given in Arafah, but is given after the Zawal. So very, very soon after the time of Dhuhr begins, a khutbah is given on the plains of Arafah, in the mosque of Arafah. And then after that khutbah is finished, the prayers are joined. And that is Dhuhr and Asr. They're joined for travelers, usually in the mosque, because the people who are the imam who's leading the prayers is not one of the people of Arafah, so he's considered to be a traveler. And 99.99% of the people there are travelers. The only people who wouldn't be are the people who are resident in Arafah. So those the rest of the people, they shorten the prayer. Everybody. So you do two rakats for the dhuhr, you do an adhan for dhuhr, then you do the iqama for dhuhr, then you pray the dhuhr. This is straight after the khutbah is finished. The adhan happens and the iqama happens while the imam is still sitting on the minbar. Then as soon as the iqama is finished, he gets off the minbar and leads the people in dhuhr. Then the adhan for asr is called, and the iqama for asr, and then he leads the people in asr. And if you are on Arafah and you are able to get there, you should go and pray with the imam. It's important to try. If you can't, and you, because Arafah is huge. Now, in order to be able to go to where the imam is praying, for a lot of people, given the numbers of people, it's almost an impossibility. So people often just stay in their area in Arafah and pray there. And that's fine. Still, you do the joining, because it's a sunnah. You join it even if you're not with the imam. Two and two. What happens if Arafah falls on Jumu'ah, by the way? Because Arafah has its own specific khutbah. And then Jumu'ah also comes at the same time and has a khutbah. So what do you do? Do you do both? The position of Malik is there is no Jumu'ah when the people are on Arafah. No Jumu'ah. The people do not do Jumu'ah. So Abu Yusuf, one of the students of Imam Abu Hanifa, came to Malik and he asked him what his position was about whether you do Jumu'ah on Arafah. And Imam Malik said, no, there's no Jumu'ah on Arafah. So Abu Yusuf said, well, look, there's a khutbah. There's two khutbahs in the same way as Jumu'ah. And then the imam prays two rak'ats after the khutbah is finished. Surely that's Jumu'ah. Imam Malik said to him, does he recite out loud or does he recite silently? And obviously the answer is he recites silently because he's doing dhuhr. So as soon as he heard that, he was silent, Abu Yusuf, and stopped taking that position. So there's no Jumu'ah. It's dhuhr. So the recitation is silent. So that's the first. Then كذلك في جمع المغرب والعشاء بالمزدلفة إذا وصل إليها. Similarly, if you leave you leave Arafat as soon as the sun sets, and you head for Muzdalifa, that's quite a long journey. So people don't tend to get to Muzdalifa until after the time of Isha, usually, because there's a lot of people going. So what happens is you don't pray on the way, Maghrib in its time, and then pray Isha when you get there. No, you wait until you get there, and then you pray a delayed Maghrib alongside the Isha. You pray three for Maghrib and then two for Isha, and you pray them in Muzdalifah. So this is called a Jam' Taqdeem, the first one with Dhuhr and Asr. You pray at the beginning of the time, and the second one, Jam' Ta'khir, you join them together late. You delay one of the prayers to the time of the other one. That's what you do with Muzdalifah. What happens if you get to Muzdalifah before Isha and you don't join them? Or if you pray Maghrib, you can't join Isha to it. The best thing to do is to wait for the Imam to come and delay your Maghrib, even though you've arrived earlier, pray your Maghrib and Isha later. But if you pray your Isha forward, bring your Isha forward with the Maghrib in the Maghrib time, you have to repray it. It's not valid in those circumstances. What happens if you can't reach Muzdalifah because there's so many people until basically the time of Fajr? This happens quite a lot now. A lot of people struggle to get there. He answers the question here. He says, إِذَا وَصَلَ إِلَيْهَا, if you reach it. If you're unable to reach it, Then you pray your Isha and Maghrib join together wherever you are, even if you're not in Muzdalifa. وإذا جد السير بالمسافر فله أن يجمع بين الصلاتين في آخر وقت الظهر وأول وقت العصر. So now we're talking about somebody who's traveling. This is the fifth instance here. The fifth time when you can join is when you are a traveler. When you are physically traveling. When the travel is tough and you're pressed for time. Jadda sayr, or it's a difficult journey. It's not easy for you to stop on this journey. There's no easy places for you to stop. Or your time is so tight that you can't stop more than once. He says here, the ideal thing, if you're traveling and you're pressed for time and you can only stop once, is to stop at the end of the time of dhuhr and then pray your two rakats for dhuhr at the end of the time and your two rakats for asr at the beginning of its time. So you still get them both in this time. If you can do that, that's the best thing you can do while you're traveling. Make sure each prayer is still in its time. That's the very, very best thing. That's called jam' suri. It's like jam', but not really, because you're still praying each prayer in its time. وكذلك المغرب والعشاء. The same applies with Maghrib and Isha. So he says here, again, then you would take the position that the position of Maghrib extends to the time of Isha. So you would pray your Maghrib just before Isha and then your Isha in its own time. That's the best position that you can do. وَإِذَا ارْتَحَلَ فِي أَوَّلِ وَقْتِ الصَّلَاةِ الْأُولَى جَمَعَ حِينَئِذٍ. If you are only able to stop at the beginning of the time of one of the prayers, that's when you're able to stop. Or if you start your journey then and won't be able to stop later on the journey, then depends what time you're going to arrive here. If you're going to arrive at your destination before the daruri time of the second prayer. So let's say you leave Norwich just after dhuhr, and you're traveling to Edinburgh, let's say. And you're not expecting to arrive in Edinburgh until, you know, just before Maghrib. Yeah? It's quite a quick car. You're not expecting to arrive until just before Maghrib. What do you do? You're not able to stop on the journey. Apart from the once when you can pray before you leave and then you're not going to be able to stop on the journey. Or you'll be able to stop once and only at the beginning of the time. What you do is you bring your, you have a choice here because you're arriving before Maghrib. You can either pray your Asr alongside your Dhuhr or you can delay it if there will be enough time for you to pray it when you arrive in its Daruri time. But you have a choice here because it's the Daruri time. So both bringing it forward is a Darura. Is a necessity, and then delaying it is also a necessity. So you can choose which. If you're going to arrive after Maghrib, you bring it forward alongside Dhuhr. Yeah? If you're going to arrive before the Daruri time of Asr begins, say before the yellowing of the sun, then you would pray your Dhuhr in its time before you left, and then you pray Asr when you arrive. You wouldn't pray it on the journey. Is that clear? So the jam' here is dependent upon when your arrival time is likely to be. Ta'khir, which is delaying. Taqdeem, which is bringing forward. And suri, which is when it's in the form of jam', but it's not truly speaking a jam' because each thing is in its own time.
So you can pray in the place of residence?
Sorry?
You can pray in the place of residence? Like you said, you can pray in Norwich before you go?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You wouldn't be saying traveling prayers, though. But you can join them if you know you're not going to arrive until afterwards and you won't be able to stop.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, il murid and yajma'a, if you are somebody, so you have the musafir, which is the fifth type of jama'. And then you have a murid, which is somebody who's sick, and he has the same ruling as a traveler in most things. So he says here, if you're sick and maybe you only have the energy to pray one time, to do your wudu and get ready for prayer once, he says here, a murid has the right, somebody who's sick has the right to yajma, to join the prayer, idha khafa, if he is afraid, and yaghliba ala aqli, that he will not be in possession of his faculties, or he will be asleep or knocked out or whatever it is, inda zawal wa inda al-ghurub. So whether at the beginning of the time when it's when there's zawal, or at the end of the time when there is ghurub. In other words, either at the beginning of the time he will be knocked out, so he won't be able to do the prayer in that time, or at the end of the time he won't be able to do the prayer. In one case he can delay until the later time and join them together, and the other he can d pray them together at the beginning, because he won't be in a position where he can pray them later. He can bring them forward. If you're sick, even if you're at home and not traveling, you can join prayers, so long as there is a reason for you to do it, whether it's your condition doesn't allow you to pray more than once, or you're likely to be out for the count during part of the time and only available in one other part of the time when it's shared times. وَإِنْ كَانَ الْجَمْعَ أَرْفَقُ بِهِ, and if the joining the prayer is easier for him, لِبَطْنٍ, because of stomach ache, وَنَحْوِهِ, or something else like that, some other factor that's making it difficult for him, جَمْعَ وَسَطْ وَقْتِ الظُّهْرِ. In other words, it stops him from praying more than one time because of the pain or the difficulty of him having to go up and do all of the thing of doing the wudu and getting himself ready and standing. He says here, in that case, he should pray in the middle of the time, doing the dhuhr in its own time and the asr in its own time, or the maghrib in its own time and the isha in its own time. So if you have the excuse that you're only capable of doing it once, try and do it where both prayers are in their time. If you are going to be knocked out at the beginning of the time or at the end of the time, then you have the excuse to bring it forward or bring it back and join them together. Same as a traveler, really. So we'll finish with that. Are there any questions regarding all of this? About joining prayers or anything like that? By the way, when you join prayers, it means that you join them. You don't do the first prayer, then do all of your, dhikr after the prayer, and then do a few nafilas, and then do the other prayer. No, you join them. You finish the salamu alaikum, then you get up and you do the iqama for the other one.
If we're traveling, and say, for example, you start in Norway, and another time is going to come in, but you're going to be a traveler at that time, and you won't be able to stop for that prayer. When you join in the early time, you pray four rakat and two, or four, four?
Or four.
Four.
Because you're not a traveler yet. And it's just speculation that you're going to be traveling at that time. I mean, basically, this thing of praying forward, there has to be, you have to be basically about to set out. It can't be like, I might be traveling later, so you join them. There has to be some actual start to your journey, in a sense. You're about to start, so then you can bring them forward. Yeah, it'll be 4-4 in those cases. If I provide with a 0% interest loan, am I required to pay zakat on the loan that I have given? When you have made somebody a loan, it depends whether that loan is one that this is completely separate from this topic. But if you lend somebody something, it depends whether you have expectation of that loan being paid back to you and whether the loan is due or not. So you have different types of loans. For example, if I'm a shopkeeper, and people come in and they pay with the tab, and then they pay at the end of the month. So they would write down what they've bought every day, and then they would come and pay everything that they owe for the month at the end of the. That's basically a debt to me. In a sense, I've loaned him the amount for him to buy that food. It's like a debt, isn't it? That is considered to be money that you have even before he's paid it for the purpose of zakat. That type of loan, because it's one that you have the expectation of it being paid and it's due now. But if I lend you £1,000 and you're not going to pay me, and I say pay me back in 10 years, well, let's say 1,000 dinars because that's got the zakat level. And I say pay me back in 10 years, I don't owe you, I don't have to pay any zakat on that 1,000 dinars, even though it's owed to me, until it's paid back to me. And the case here is if somebody owes me 100 dinars and he has the money and the debt is due, and he can pay me back, but I'm just not letting him pay me back yet in order to avoid zakat, then that's counted as me having it. So I'll say, all right, you owe it to me. Wait until next week before you pay it back to me. Because my zakat is due now. That's like an avoidance thing. But anyway, even if he's owed it to you for more than a year, there's zakat due on it anyway. And anyway, it depends how long it's been owed to you for. Has to have been a minimum of a year in order if you have to pay zakat on it. Anyway, we'll finish there. بسير وبركاته بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين الرحمن الرحيم مالك يوم الدين إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين اهدنا الصراط المستقيم صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين آمين اللهم صل على سيدنا محمد عبدك ورسولك النبي الأمي وعلى آله وصحبه وسلم تسليما سبحان ربك رب العزة عما يصفون وسلام على المرسلين والحمد لله رب العالمين We'll be back on Monday next week, inshallah, at the same time, 4 p.m. Monday next week. Monday and Wednesday next week. Assalamu alaikum.